This is URN Sport.
Hubbard puts up a three-point shot, and he nails it!
Super Wednesday is ours.
And it's in! Fantastic!
All 33,000 students at the University of Nottingham, they know what this means.
This is URN Sport.
Hello, and welcome back to URN. You are listening to the URN Sports Show on this Tuesday evening. I'm your host, Jeremy Dunn. I'm joined here in the studio by Chris Young, Jack Newman, Rhys Thomas, Arvin and Turan. So guys, we're going to start off this packed show by talking about a story that broke yesterday, and that is funding cuts to seven UK sports teams, including most notably of them badminton. The other sports that have been affected are archery, goalball, fencing, table tennis, weightlifting and wheelchair rugby, meaning this is hit across the board. Paralympics are also suffering, despite having appealed for an extension to their funds. On the other hand, powerlifting, however, has received a successful appeal from the UK Sport and will receive £1.3 million, which it will manage itself now and no longer be managed by the UK Commission. Really bit of a surprise this, isn't it, guys, considering the success that we had at Rio previous year.
I was going to mention, you touched on it perfectly, ever since the lottery funding and the national lottery funding has come into UK athletics and the Olympic funding as well, we've been insane. You know, what was it, eight years ago, we weren't really doing so well in terms of the medal tables. And, you know, ever since, you know, 2008, we did okay. 2012, our home Olympics, we came third. And last year, we came second only to America. And, you know, when you compare the size of our countries, obviously beating China was insane. And, yeah, it seems a bit weird to be cutting funding. But, hopefully it doesn't have as much of an effect that people think it's going to have. I do think we are going to be solid in the 2020 Olympics. It's just a bit of a bizarre story, really.
Yeah, I think, it's always been the design or the setup of the way that sports are funded. So, for example, we look at basketball in 2012 when that lost its funding from the National Lottery. So the idea is we take the money from the teams when the sports we're not very good at and bring them to the sports we are good at. But even sports like cycling have seen reductions in their funding, so they've lost £4 million worth of funding. But what is surprising, yes, you're right. Marcus Ellis and Chris Langridge did win bronze for GB in the men's double at Rio. So already that's meant to be a sign of success because obviously we added to the medal table. But despite that, it still has seen its funding cut. Table tennis as well, archery, I think are sports that we weren't very good at compared to, like, you know, the Asian countries as well, like South Korea in the archery, China in the table tennis, certainly. But badminton is a massive shock, and I think it goes massively against, you know, the setup that had been previously set up, and that if you do well, you will receive more funding, as has been the case in gymnastics.
Yeah, I mean, that ties me on to another thought which has sort of come out of this. I mean, remember after 2012, there was the whole point of the legacy of those Olympic Games. It was going to be a big turning point for loads of sports. And like you've touched on there, Chris, you know, one of the big incentives of teams do well as well, where they're going to build for the long term and get future funding. I mean, this is now going to possibly act as a counterproductive too, because if our strongest sport, cycling, is also receiving cuts, then is this really going to throw the question of the legacy of our games now into doubt?
Potentially, but I think we see some of the sports that we have won at. For example, things like gymnastics. Max Whitlock won 2 gold medals. Unbelievable. Who would have thought that even a couple of years ago that would even be possible for Team GB? So I think I wouldn't say necessarily throws away the legacy away, because we are still have the target set by Team GB of winning 51 to 85 Olympic medals, and which is a big gap, obviously, and 115 to 162 Paralympic medals in Tokyo. So the legacy is still going strong. And I think what's encouraging from what we've seen in Rio is that we are winning sports that we weren't expected to win in the first place. So there is some success, but it is a shame to see things like badminton, archery, you know, the idea that, you know, there'd be funding to see, like, how far they could really progress, but that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be a case of we're going to focus on these sports, really keep the money where it's at, because cycling will still be funded loads of money, so I don't think they're really at threat of losing their dominance over the cycling world, but I think the lesser sports definitely will need to find some other ways of gaining the money.
How Jack's touched on this already, but how do we think this is going to affect them, guys, possibly Team GB going into, I mean, it's a few years off, but looking ahead to Tokyo 2020, what do we think this is going to be, any impact on this?
I think it'll first and foremost, very quickly, just encourage people who are going to the sports, you know, to try, you know, the sports that are more funded, because now archery is now effectively going to be self-funded, really. We're going to have to find money from somewhere else. But I think in terms of the overall essence, I don't think necessarily that it will really, like I said, damage our chances of winning the medals, because I think those came from other sports apart from, like, you know, archery, goalball, fencing, sports we never expected to win. So I think we'll still do well in Tokyo, but I think it's just a more of a, like, a stand. It's like, we are not really encouraging these sports to do well, which I think personally is a shame, but ultimately, you know, is national lottery. You do have to be wise where we do spend the money.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think also in the future, looking past Tokyo, I think it will really affect our medal chances, as we won't encourage new sports to grow and potential medals for them in future Olympics. So I think it's a shame for UK sport and sport in general.
Hi, this is Jeff Selling from Sky Sports, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Cheers, Jeff. Now we're going to move on to looking at the upcoming games this weekend for the Six Nations Rugby. And the game of the weekend, at least in my opinion, looking at it, is Ireland versus France. Vital points on offer for both sides, but critically for Ireland, they're suffering at the moment from a bit of an injury crisis that's been going on. They've lost quite a few players both before this tournament starts and during it, especially over this weekend's rugby union action. It hasn't exactly been an easy transition, has it, guys?
No, not at all. I think Ireland have been unlucky over the last 2 years, really. They won the Six Nations 2 years ago, but then they came back with a whole host of injuries and ended up being third. This year, similar, they haven't been able to prove themselves. I think that in the last few weeks, that they were unlucky against Scotland with the injuries not there. They'd have won quite easily. And they managed to win again the week before last. However, I think there's a bit of optimism in Ireland at the moment. There are a lot of injuries, but some of the main people are coming back. Sexton's back into training, along with a few of the other main people. So I think, despite the injuries, there might be some cause for optimism in the squad.
France, they've had a bit of an interesting start to the Six Nations, haven't they? It hasn't exactly been the start that they might be wanting, but then again, it is a French team. So,
well, I mean, there's that old cliche that they use in rugby a lot. It depends on which France team decides to turn up.
Really. My favourite, you
know,
cliche.
It's that cliche, and it's time and time again. I know it's a cliche, but we have to use it because it's just what happens with France. You know, they always go into the Six Nations as that team who could threaten to break it into that top three, and, you know, maybe even push England all the way to in terms of winning the championship. Ireland are going to be looking to bounce back. You said, you know, that disappointing first game defeat against Scotland trying their hardest not to be walking away with a wooden spoon this year again. So, you know, France versus Ireland, I think that this is basically a battle of who is going to potentially push England closest in terms of the Six Nations. So, I mean, we'll talk about the England game in a bit. But, yeah, I think Ireland versus France is definitely going to be one of the games to be watching. If you're a rugby fan and you like the Six Nations, this is going to be a crucial game for both teams.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, like, we'll touch on England later. I think you're right that England are likely to win now. However, I think Ireland and France are, this game is the contention for second place, in my opinion.
I was actually going to disagree. I think France have been brilliant, the Six Nations. Like, they were really, really, really unlucky to lose to England in that first game, I thought. Mm. And Scotland, I thought, played with their heart in France. And actually, if anything, Scotland, again, like, really forced the French to really, like, grind out the results. So I think France have been brilliant this year, considering the fact we have kind of written them off as a team that we kind of expect not to do that greatly. But no, they look like a strong team, and Ireland, France will be strong. I do expect Ireland to win, but France will definitely give it a game, I think.
I'm not saying I'm not expecting them to do greatly. I'm just saying that each year it's sort of they don't perform as well as we know that they can.
No,
perform.
Exactly. It's always been like,
and
since
it's always
they
always get overshadowed by the home nations, by the likes of England, Ireland, and Wales, and they always end up finishing in, you know, third or fourth place. And I think that this year they are going to be definitely out to prove a point. Like you say, it was a bit unlucky on the opening game against England. Obviously, I'm happy for England winning that, but it was a bit of a disappointment. You know, we saw the France that we knew that they could push us all the way, and we did manage to just grab a win in the end. And yeah, I think France, like I say, they're going to be out with a point to prove against Ireland.
I think the problem with France is they don't really have any star quality at number 10. If you look at all the other teams, they've got really quality at kicking, such as Owen Farrell, and France really don't have that with Lopez in there. So that's their problem, really. That's why they can't really challenge England and Ireland. So as much as how well they've played, they can't really compete.
Yeah, I think you're right. The thing with Ireland is as well that they've got Sexton and they've also got Jackson, who's been playing outstanding recently. If anything, I'd argue it might be a shame to see Sexton come back in because of how good Jackson's proved himself. If it comes into kicking, which with both teams being relatively even matched, I think it might do. You're right, I think Ireland could just tip it.
Well, then we'll move on to one of the other games, which is one which I think quite a few people are interested in watching. I mean, we will come to the England game, but I think there's more to talk about when we look at possibly the Wales-Scotland game, because on the flip side, we talked about Ireland suffering injuries. Scotland have got a lot of players now coming back into the fold. Six players that had been injured are now returning from the France game or prior to that, where they suffered injuries. So it looks like it's going to be a strong, fully fit Scotland that will await a Welsh team coming up to Murrayfield. Do you think then we could be in for another upset that the Scots might pull? I mean, the Ireland game was viewed an upset. Could they do it against the Welsh?
Well, both sides going into this, coming off of losses. Obviously, Wales disappointed against England. Scotland, you know, off from the highs of the first from the first game against Ireland, you know, they were brought back down to earth against France. But I think again, you know, we always talk about it each year. Scotland and Italy are always in that battle to not finish in last place. I think Scotland this year have, despite their injury, they've definitely got quite a good chance of, you know, making it into maybe even the top three. I think they will push Wales all the way. Wales, I wouldn't say they struggled against England, but, you know, in the second half they didn't play as well as we all know that they can, and England took advantage of that and managed to come away with a win, 21-15, was it? Yeah. But yeah, it was, I don't know, I'd like to write Scotland off, but you never know with Scotland. I mean, they are this year a lot stronger than they have been in previous years, and I would fancy Scotland in this one.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm actually going to the game on Saturday. I'm up in Edinburgh. As a Welsh person, I'm a bit nervous about it, to be honest. Sitting here now, it's not ideal. Yeah, I think you're right. Wales, I mean, the Welsh country in general, we are concerned. We were deflated after the England game. I think just a little bit lack of cohesion, and the English being absolutely dominant at the moment, 16 games in a row, you know, where it wasn't Wales's day. But yeah, there are a lot of people coming back for Scotland, and there's, whilst I'm nervous, at the same time I've got a bit of a conflict, because I think Laidlaw's out, the captain, and he's been the absolute driving force in that Scottish team, coordinating everything. And at the same time, without the captain, six new players back in the team might see a little bit of a chemistry imbalance too.
So by the sounds of it then, we have got two very close games on our hands, and that then leaves us with the third game, the elephant in the room, England hosting Italy. That has to be a win for England, surely, if they've got any intention of wanting to, at the moment, looking like a grand slam, but for winning the title. I mean, could Italy cause an upset?
I mean, you know, you can never say never in any kind of sport. Italy can cause an upset. I don't think they will. It should be a pretty easy win for England. Again, touch wood, I don't want to curse it. I don't want it to happen where, you know, Italy come out and we get smashed 60-0. But yeah, it should be something that we should win.
We're now going to move on to cricket, and the big story of this week is Ben Stokes's record-breaking move to the IPL. It's a move that's caught a lot of people by surprise, because I think the price tag involved is the real surprise. But he's now moved, obviously, down to India to play for Rising Sun Supergiants for 1.7 million. It's big money for India.
Yeah, just to get this clear, Ben Stokes' value of 1.7 mil was twice the amount of the highest salary cap of Big Bash League and PSL. So his transfer value is much more than the salary. So that's out of the books. But yeah, again, coming to your question, Jeremy, I honestly think that Stokes will really benefit from playing in India just before the Champions Trophy. Because I think the pitches as well, right now, like, I think they're quite changing the pitches from turning. They're trying to make it a bit fast and bouncy pitches, and English pitches are quite bouncy. So I think it's definitely going to help Stokes as a player develop before the Champions Trophy, which is one of the big trophies in international cricket.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big move for him. I can definitely see it helping. I mean, we look, obviously, I mean, he's... Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. He's just been made the vice captain for England. Yeah, so that could be a really good blend. The fact we've got, you know, I mean, last week I was obviously vocally slightly sceptical about Root being appointed, but you know, we've moved on from that now. But having the English captain playing for Yorkshire, obviously in England, and then we've got the vice captain playing down in India. That could really help the team actually going forward. It would give it a much needed kind of diversity in a playing style that we've sort of been lacking, I think, for a bit.
I think that it goes back to the whole sort of Premier League situation. You know, whenever there's a massive deal happening in the Premier League, there's always that sort of underlying, oh, am I going to live up to my expectations for the amount of money that's been paid for me? Do I think Ben Stokes is going to do that? Absolutely. I think that he is a brilliant, brilliant player. He is a bit inconsistent. Yes, he can have games where he absolutely smashes it, and then he'll get out for a duck. But yeah, I think he's going to do well in the IPL, and I think it's fantastic to see quite a few English players being signed up into the IPL. I think it's a total of 8 English players are going to be playing in the IPL this year, which is, I think it's great for England sport, and especially for the England T20 side.
I think this goes back to Owen Morgan's one-day revolution, really, and the ECB trying to focus more on one-day cricket. Letting these players play in the IPL is a great step for English cricket. They can develop their skills playing against the best players. Look at someone like Tim Al-Mills. He can grow no end, bowling to Virat Kohli, Abe de Villiers, Chris Gayle every day. He can only get better, and it's great news for English cricket, especially with the upcoming Champions Trophy, and I really think they have a great chance. And maybe if they can get Tim Al-Mills, someone like him, to play one-day cricket as well with his back, then I think they could have the potential to be one of the best one-day sides for the next 10 years.
When we're trying to work out why Stokes has gone, though, for this surprise, for this slightly staggeringly high price by cricket standards, one of the reasons is that a bidding war effectively seemed to have ensued over who's going to get him. Mumbai Indians, Royal Challengers Bangalore and Delhi Daredevils, as well as the Sunrise Hyderabad, were all in the race before he eventually moved to the team that eventually he has signed for. So that's an interesting thing to note when we're wondering as to why this price might have occurred.
Well, there's very few cricketers in the history of cricket who can bat in the top four and bowl in the top four as well. And Ben Stokes is one of those. He's an opening bowler. He can bowl anywhere in the order, and he can bat anywhere in the order. And that price comes at a premium. He's one of the greatest all-rounders in cricket in modern day. Even someone like Callis didn't really have the explosiveness of Stokes, and that's why he didn't go for as much, and that's why Stokes has absolutely smashed this record the other day. So it's no surprise for me.
Talking about one of the other signings, Tim Al-Mills, you know, you talk about the auction and the battles that were happening. I think his base value was something like 60k.
Yeah.
And it just skyrocketed instantly. You know, he's been playing his trade in the T20 Blast over here for Somerset. No, it's not for Somerset. I can't remember what team he played for in the English T20 League. But yeah, he's been playing in the Pakistani Super League as well. He's been playing all over the place, and he's been doing quite well for himself. I think that this is what has really got his name out there. You mentioned it earlier, you know, the problems that he's had with his back, why he's had to step down from, you know, longer forms of the game. And I think, you know, T20, when he's bowling short overs and he's bowling them quick and he gets through those overs quick, I think that he's a real steal for any side. You know, we've seen that he can bowl at pace. He can trouble the likes of Chris Gayle. He can trouble any of the top batsmen in the world. And I think that, you know, putting him into the most competitive T20 league in the world is only going to do wonders for him.
Yeah, I think you know, it's kind of been nailed on the head, really, to be honest. Like, if it was going to be someone who would break the record, it would be someone who is not just a batsman but also a bowler. You know, Ben Stokes can do that, but also he could do that very well. Inflation is a huge part of the game, so we have seen the amount of money that the IPL now makes is staggering. And the 1.2, the 1.7 million, you know, they'll make it back easily. You know, for like the fans that go through the television rights, they'll now go. And also because now someone like Ben Stokes going to a team like the Super Giants will attract a lot more attention from just the English media fans alone, and so there'll be even more viewers potentially from England. So the IPL is just growing, so I wouldn't be surprised if, say, next year, no, you know, it goes for even higher. No, but the question is who would.
I'm pretty much excited to see what happens next year, because next year all the teams will be separated, so you can't see Virat Kohli back in Bangalore again. So he's going on auction as well. So when more players are there, like Virat Kohli, Steve Smith, MS Dhoni, I'm pretty excited to see what happens next year and till where the bid raises. Because if Stokes went for 1.7 million this year. I'm definitely sure there are other players who could go for much, much more.
I think especially like Virat Kohli.
Virat Kohli, yes. Yeah.
He is a symbol of, you know, amazingness in India. So
I think also, you know, you mentioned the likes of Chris Gayle as well. I mean, I know he's a bit, he can be a bit inconsistent at times, you know, but he does have games where he, you know, once he gets to 50, there's really no bowler in the world that can stop him from, you know, making 100, making 150. And I think that if, yeah, like you say, Harvey, if Ben Stokes is going for 1.7 million and he can do everything, Chris Gayle can do a bit of bowling. He's not the best. But in terms of the batting department, he is probably one of the best T20 batsmen in the entire world at the moment. And I think he's still got it left in him for a couple of years. So we could see him go for quite a high price as well.
AB de Villiers. Yeah. Anyone will buy AB de Villiers. And then his price would skyrocket. I believe next year is going to be pretty much more exciting though.
Also, I'm really excited to see how much the Indian youngsters go for next season, because with only four overseas players allowed, Indian talent's at a premium. And some of these good youngsters coming through, someone like Rishabh Pant, he can really go for a lot of money. He's one of the future stars of India, so it's going to be really exciting how the IPL develops over time.
We're now going to move on to our final story of the week, and we're going to be looking at a few bits of news that are increasingly day by day coming out more from F1, and we're going to start things off with quite a big one actually for Mercedes, and that is that Niki Lauda and Toto Wolff have signed new contracts that will keep them at Mercedes F1 until 2020. That's quite a starting a bit of business actually looking at it, guys, because the pair of them have been hugely important in the new era we're seeing of Mercedes dominance.
I'm not surprised about both them retaining their spots as they're shareholders of 30% and 10%, and having said that, Paddy Lowe has left this year, so they need an experienced person in the back. So Wolff and Niki Lauda, I'm not at all surprised by this.
You know, they're just so dominant, so why leave? You know, I think every year Toto Wolff's been there, they've won the championship, you know, twice with Lewis Hamilton, now once with Nico Rosberg, and someone like Bottas coming in to replace Rosberg, who of course has retired, is huge because he's one of the most exciting young racers on the circuit.
And he has a winning car as well.
Car as well, yeah, exactly. So, you know, now is the time to make it four in a row.
But this is it. Like, if you were Toto Wolff and you were, you know, you were with Mercedes, you'd have to be given one hell of an excuse to want to leave that team.
Yeah.
You know, I think this year's going to be close. I don't think that anyone's going to quite take it away from Mercedes this season.
I can't imagine it, no.
But, you know, there are a couple of cars being released, and we'll talk about that in a bit. And, you know, obviously with the ever-changing rules within the sport, you know, anything can happen. We saw it, you know, in 2009 with Braun GP, the ex-Honda team who went into administration. Ross Braun comes in and then Jenson Button wins his championship because they found a loophole.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Liberty Media, what rules they bring in.
I'm pretty sure there's 30%. The 30% just is worth like at least a billion, or even the 10% for that matter is worth a lot of money, so why leave?
I mean, one thing which I agree, I wasn't overly surprised, but I think it was good to see for Mercedes if they want to continue this dominance, because the pair of them are they're hugely important. I mean, Wolff, of course, taking in his position as the team's boss, but also Niki Lauda, of course, you know, he's a complete legend of F1. He has, in my opinion, one of the best brains of a sort of mechanic in a way. I mean, he famously, of course, started off his career by proving to Ferrari infamously that he could build a car better than their best mechanics.
To be honest, I was more surprised of Paddy Lowe leaving the team. He was there for a lot of years in the back of Mercedes, so him leaving could have been, it is more much of a surprise rather than Niki Lauda. And
that was, I think that was Toto definitely Wolff, the biggest surprise of all of them, the fact that he left. And but we've also just quickly touched on Bottas. Is that going to be now the new rival for Hamilton to have to overcome?
Well, I mean, Hamilton's come out and said that he hasn't got any problems with Bottas.
Yet,
no, of course. So they haven't been teammates yet. And, you know, we can talk about all of the teammates that Hamilton's had over the last
falls out with
five, six seasons. But yeah. I think that Bottas is in a good place right now. I think that they are. I think that what the team needs to do is allow them to race. If they show favouritism towards Hamilton, then there's obviously going to be something flaring up between Bottas and Hamilton. But I think, obviously, if they're in first and second in a race and they're quite close to each other, they are going to, you know, say, we want you to race, but don't, you know, don't mess up, don't crash.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that, if anything, Bottas is probably going to push Hamilton even more. I think that he has the potential to push him
even further than Rosberg did.
Oh, definitely.
And I think, yeah, Bottas, like you said earlier, he's a young guy. He's coming up and, you know, he's got a championship-winning car now.
Yeah, no,
so
exactly.
So I think that, no offence to Williams, they have a brilliant car, but it's not going to be quite as good as Mercedes. And, yeah, I think that if he was going to win a championship and he comes in first season, wins it with Mercedes, it would be absolutely fantastic for him.
I think as well as keeping away from the convention with Formula 1's, where you have one driver who will do everything to try win the championship, and then you have one person who like follows the rules.
The wingman,
exactly, like Giancarlo Fisichella and like Alonso. Yeah, yeah. No, I just had to throw in that like name there.
Nah,
so
yeah. If you see that, that's what I think Max Verstappen and Daniel Ricciardo do at Red Bull. Basically, like someone stays wingman every time. Like if you've seen the races where like both of them, like Verstappen came third in one of the races where Vettel was third, and Ricciardo literally just pushed him to fifth just because he was just wingman around. So I think that would be great as well. Like you said, like we can have like Hamilton on like top, and then
but the thing
probably
is,
Bottas
yeah,
around.
The thing is, just quickly, I mean, on this point about F1, where you always seem to have your co-driver as the wingman, it does cause, you know, promising drivers like, for example, Nicky Hülkenberg, I think, is a big one who's been pushed back for a lot of years, and he's been, you know, I remember when he broke through, everyone was touting him as effectively better than Vettel. You know, he was putting in better times when he was in the same type of car as Vettel, but the problem was Vettel obviously got the better car and is then ended up obviously going on to win all his championships. But do you think then that, I mean, we'll very quickly cover this, I just want a quick opinion from you guys on this, but do you think that the idea of you have the wingman and you then have one man is the lead, one man follows up and protects him, is a good idea, or do you think having two drivers competing for the title is a better system?
Well, Mercedes have done it, so, you know, having Hamilton and then Rosberg, you know, I think it was Toto Wolff who said, no, we're not doing the wingman thing, you compete against each other, you see each other as the rival. But with someone like Bottas, I think Bottas is a potential champion winning driver at the moment. It does seem to be more of a case of the two going against each other again.
Yeah, I honestly don't see Mercedes coming up with something like that, like where one stays a wingman and one stays a... I think they're going to have both of them, they're going to push both of them. Hamilton, like, you have to get your championship back, and Bottas, like, this is your chance, this is your golden opportunity, we picked you out of everyone, so... Yeah. I think they're going to have something in that way. And I think the other teams, what they have to look at is, like, at this moment, I think Ricciardo should kind of push Verstappen, because clearly Verstappen kind of has the faster car compared in Red Bull. So I think something like that. But again, I don't see Mercedes coming out doing sort of not wingmanship.
This is URN Sport.